Hey, this is Jeremy Thone, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an episode with Robert Bain, also known as the strongest man in freight. In this episode, we get into basically what it takes to run a brokerage or a business. Not surprisingly, well, we talk about three things, but one of the things, not surprisingly, is extreme ownership. And I think that that is a solid point that any leader of any organization should have, is to the buck stops with the person at the top, and it creates a environment where everyone does work that they actually care about. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode with Bain. Hey, Robert, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live. I am pumped to speak with you. And for those that don't know you, would you just mind introducing yourself and your moniker that you have in the freight industry?
Absolutely, man. Appreciate having me on. So I'm Robert Bain. For those who don't know, I prefer to go by my last name, Bain. My moniker in the industry is I am the strongest man in logistics.
Yeah, that's pretty fierce. How did you get that? Is that because you could squat a certain amount? Or I've seen you and I've met you in person, and yeah, you are tough. I could see that. So how did it come about, though?
So I powerlift outside of work. That is probably what I am most passionate about outside of my family and logistics is strength sports. And how the actual name came about was in 2020, I actually ruptured the distal tendon in my left arm. And so I was in recovery and it sucked. It was not fun. Couple the injury with the end of the world basically happening at that time. I was pretty down in the dumps. You know, life kind of sucked. Good friend of mine, Trey Griggs. He was just being a good friend. He never talking. And I was, open up to him about how I was feeling and that I was feeling pretty depressed. And, you know, he was just trying to build me up and be a good friend. And he's like, hey, man, like, you know, I know you're going to get through this. You're the strongest guy I know. And honestly, you're probably the strongest man in logistics. I don't think for him it was this like epiphany moment. Like, oh, man, this is like, he's just trying to be a good friend. But for me, it was an epiphany moment. I'm like, yo, he's probably right. One. And then two, like, because I see kind of cool name. Like, I dig that. So I kicked it around for about a year. And then I said, screw it. And I put it on my LinkedIn as my handle. And it just took off. It kind of hit critical mass at Manifest this year in Las Vegas, where we had counts of close to 50 people come up to me and not even saying my name. Like, oh, hey, strongest man in logistics. I love your stuff. Man, like, this thing really is a thing now.
Power of personal brands. It's powerful. And Trey is no joke, too, with his personal brand. I haven't kept up with it, but I'm sure that he's got like around 10,000 followers or more. So he's a beast when it comes to that. And that's cool that he actually, yeah. I like that when other people in the community lift each other up. I kind of subscribe to that rising tide lifts all boats kind of philosophy.
Absolutely.
Let's get into the actual episode. So I know you're a bit of an operations kind of guru. So the focus of this episode is basically like three operational pillars for like a successful org. So you want to kind of like walk us through your thoughts on this and point number one?
So let me give you some background as for like how it all came about, and then I'll walk you through each pillar. So I'm a simple guy, and I try to keep things very simple, because what I find is that super smart people try to make things really, really complicated, because either A, it makes them look smarter, or B, it makes them seemingly indispensable to those who use their services. I am not a super smart person. I'm just a big dumb animal. So knowing my place, I wanted something simple, because ultimately what I've always wanted is the ability to duplicate myself. What I have found is that very successful leaders can duplicate who they are. I realize that if I could do that, then I can suddenly start focusing on the things I want to do most versus things I have to do right now. So that was kind of where this all stemmed from and why I started trying to boil down, like, how is operations, like, what are the things that every single operator at every level can do to positively impact the business?
To your point too, I feel like when you position yourself as the smartest person in the room, that's like a hard frame to be at all the time. I think that I'd rather go with your positioning, like just like, hey, I'm just an idiot. And that way, if I do anything that people are happy with, it makes my life a lot easier. But it is very interesting that people, to your point too, like obviously too, sometimes overcomplicate things and just make things more complicated than they need to be for whatever reason. So I completely agree with you with all those points.
So I broke operations down into three things. Pillar one is extreme ownership. What I mean by that is, and this actually comes from the book by the same name by Jocko Willink. So if you've read it, if others have read it, great book. If you haven't read it, go get it. This book, for me, really shifted how I looked at leadership and your responsibility as a leader. Because he speaks of leadership in business paralleled with leadership in times of war. Leadership in business, when you screw up, your stock goes down a couple points. In times of war, when you screw up, people die. The stakes cannot be higher. So when you think in those terms, like, okay, if I have to make sure that everybody does their part and everybody gets home safe, what a great way to look at your business too. Even though the stakes aren't that high, it forces you to communicate and to do things differently. So when I look at the C-level person, it's on them to make sure everything that they know about a situation, if something has gone sideways, is known. And it's known from top to bottom. They own not only their portion of all activity, they're also ensuring that every person that is involved in parallel activities knows their role, is completing it, and that leadership knows where everybody sits. It's a bit of like project management from a mindset perspective. But ultimately what it is you are taking ownership of the entire process from the moment that the orders come down until the mission is complete. And yes, that is something as simple as moving a load. When you have this level of extreme ownership, it drives some people nuts. Because like, what? Why on earth do we need this much communication, this many people talking? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But when you, for all intents and purposes, eliminate the opportunities for failure and for miscommunication and for people to be misaligned, then even if you don't get the result you wanted, the team is still moving in lockstep. So you don't have finger pointing.
I love that, actually, because I feel like sometimes when you see leaders that point fingers at people, like in their team, it just sort of causes dissent in the whole line of things. When you see a leader that just like says, hey, like I screwed up, don't worry about it, and like let's move on, like let's figure it out from here, I feel like that usually brings a much stronger team. I also feel like a lot of the times maybe the reason information doesn't bubble up to the top is because maybe they're scared of like the leaders in front of them, or the environment is not a place where they feel like their head's not going to get chopped off. So is there any tips on that? Correct. As far as like making sure that like you're opening, like sometimes I feel like some leaders close off the stream of information just because of the way they act.
Some leaders they're unpredictable, and that's why they don't get information. Because if you can't predict how someone's going to react, why would you give them any information? Because you can predict that they'll do nothing if you give them nothing. So when you are a predictable leader, you'll react in a certain way. You don't have to be subdued or nice or kumbaya all the time, but you do have to be someone who is predictably active in your organization. If people have no idea how you're going to react to information, they will withhold as much as possible to make sure that their interaction with you is as short as possible.
So fair. So true.
Number two is customer experience. Ultimately, your customers are who pay your bills. But also, when you think of customers, you have to think of them in three buckets. So customer experience is how any of your customer bases feel about their interaction with you. Now, most people think customers and they're thinking shippers, especially in our sector. They're thinking shippers, those who are cutting me checks and sending me money. You actually have three customer bases if you are a transportation provider. You have your customers, your shippers. You have your carriers and truck drivers. I put those all together. So whether you're a trucking company or a broker or a combination, the professional drivers that work with you and move your freight. And then you have your employees. So you have those three buckets. Each one of them is a customer base. Each one has a different set of needs. And each one of those, you have to focus on their experience. Here's why. Shippers talk. Shippers know, as if, for instance, that they're in the news recently, Zipline Logistics. They're a great brokerage focused on the CPG sector. They've developed technology around that, and they provide a great customer experience for their CPG customers. Their customers refer others in their space to them because they say, hey, like, these guys do a great job at executing their freight, getting us data, and making sure that our customers, their end users, have information they need that's insightful. So they've created a great customer experience. On the carrier side, you know, think about this. I mean, the whole reason the Broker Carrier Summit came into being is because people know that the relationship between carriers and brokers is broken and has been for a while. By developing a great relationship with carriers and with truck drivers, you set yourself apart as an intermediary and as a trucking company. And again, this is going to be paying them on time. This is going to be providing them opportunities and discounts through your own buying power. This is going to be communication to them. This is going to be making sure they get paid for any additional services they provide. So driver assist, attention, all that type of stuff. Not fighting them to the nail over $25. Like, no, pay the guy and move on.
Totally. I get that.
When you're easy to do business with, that creates a great customer experience on the carrier driver side. And then your employees. Your employees are either your biggest recruiting tool or they're your biggest hindrance to growth. So you look at certain organizations, like I think Arrive is a great example. Think of like Arrive from when they hit about 100 employees till call it a couple years ago. Everywhere you looked, all you heard about was how good the great culture it was. They brought on great leaders. Steam Logistics was another one when they came out of their non-compete with Coyote. They were going like crazy. Their culture was awesome. They had the gong. Like, employees had a great experience with them. Conversely, I don't think you hear a lot of positive experiences with a certain three-letter organization based in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I know which one I think you're talking about. You see like trucks like painted the sides of them, like top and top.
You know, I mean, call it this was national news. They found out their VPN couldn't handle everyone being at home in 2020. So what'd they do? They clapped 700 people and then held them to their non-competes.
Jeez, that's terrible.
That's a terrible employee experience.
Yeah, that's awful.
Or if you withhold, hey, you close an organization and you withhold people's last check because you don't have money to cover it. You're a scumbag.
Yeah, that is total dirtbag moves at that point. Right. I completely agree with you. I think that it's almost like weird that they're not thinking about the way that it. Sometimes I feel like people just say it's just business, but at the end of the day, it's not just business. I think that people need to step up and do a little bit better when it comes to things like that. Would you agree?
100%. Because yes, it's just business when you're doing the hard thing of cutting somebody or what is perceived as the hard thing. But yet people take it personal if I move on because I get a better opportunity. So what's the difference? This is first Robert's second opinion. So this is not reflective of GLCS, of the industry, of the Broker Carrier Summit. If I'm leaving an organization, if you get more than 3 days notice, you're lucky. And here's why. Are you giving me more than a week's notice? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because it's not personal. It's just business, man.
Yeah, it is interesting how that I like your perspective though too of like the holistic part of all three parts, because I do feel sometimes people, business owners, will leave out their staff as part of like the whole thing of like, hey, like we have to make our staff happy because our staff is actually the one that's serving like the rest of the clients, and like if they're not happy, that's a problem.
You have a lot of business owners that have this idea that employees are lucky to work for them. The exact opposite is true. And some will even take offense if you tell them as such. You are lucky you have me on your roster. And the response is, well, you're lucky I pay you. No, actually, because we have this agreement, you're legally obligated to pay me for the time I spend here. That's how that employment contract works. Understand, like, it's a symbiotic relationship. And this concept of somehow because you are a founder or you have a title, you're better than anybody is small total energy, as I call it, in power.
I love that. You need to make that shirt.
I have one, actually. Yes. And I give it out of meats every now and then.
Oh, that's amazing. I love it. Yeah. I agree with you. I don't know what that is. I don't know why like people get egos as soon as like titles come up and things like that. And I agree with you. I feel like there's so much like opportunity now for, especially with like the creator economy, there's several people that I know a couple people that are like making 6-7 figures as like one person creator businesses. Right. So to me, I'm just sitting there going, if Danco can make $4 million as a one person creator, like I'm definitely doing something. I'm not saying that I'm doing anything wrong, but I'm just saying that the value of what's possible now is much different than it was even like 10 years ago. Even like the guy from Y Combinator, OpenAI, he has a whole business group that they're saying that when is there going to be the first $1 billion one person business because of AI. And the way I look at that, I was like, dude, there's so much opportunity now to make money in the market, just as long as like you go out there and you provide value. Trey Griggs is a perfect example of scaling his agency to like a good amount after a couple of years. He's crushing it.
Absolutely. And so again, you should come back to customer experience. when you give your employees great experience, then they translate that to both your carriers, because you're going to have, you know, a carrier facing group and a customer facing group. Mm-hmm. And they vicariously then will have a great experience and continue to come back and work with you. And so it's incredibly important to think about customer experience. And then you look at the seat level. I mean, if I'm seat level and I'm scheduling appointments every day with warehouses of my customers, I can impact customer experience every single day. Mm-hmm. Every single day. So those are the first two pillars: extreme ownership and customer experience.
Love those two. What do we got for number three?
Number three, and this is the one all the business owners are gonna love: free cash flow. And now here's where they're all gonna hate me. Guess what revenue is when it comes to your business? It's a vanity metric. Guess what EBITDA is when it comes to your business? A slightly less vain vanity metric. Neither one of those matter when it comes to can I pay my bills or not.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
And here's what I mean by that. Are they indicators of the healthier business? Yes. But also I say they're vanity metrics because these two pillars I pulled from the Amazon way, which is taken directly from Jeff Bezos' second in command for about 10 years at Amazon. Fairly successful business. Free cash flow was the only thing Jeff Bezos cared about. If you read his first 20 letters to investors, first 20 years of Amazon, he straight up says, I don't care about profits. I care about customer experience, and I care about our free cash flow. If our free cash flow is taken care of, everything else takes care of itself.
Totally fair. So one job of CEO, right? To have cash?
Right. Cash on hand. And so when you look at, you have paid your vendors, you paid your bills, you paid your employees, and you have that baseline of like, hey, $1,000 is the new zero in the account, right? You have that free cash flow. That allows you to invest in your business. What are you investing in? Technology, in rewards for your employees, in your customer experience, whether that is through either technology, whether it's through customer conferences. I think Uber Freight is a good job of this, where they have their top customers come in and they get to hear from Uber leadership, from other thought leaders around the space. It's always in a really cool spot around San Francisco. It's a cool user conference, right? McCloud is the same thing. When you do this, now all of a sudden you start to have this flywheel effect. When I have free cash flow, I can invest in my business and my employees. My employees, when taken care of financially, are then able to invest in customer experience because they feel rewarded, because they know the more business I get, the more I'm rewarded. Mm-hmm. And then that leads to extremely owning more things because, again, they have more stuff on their plate. They're being challenged. And so now they're feeling more rewarded aside from the financial part of the business in their careers. So then going back the other way, you own everything, creates great customer experience, which leads to more business, which generates more free cash flow, which then you invest back in the business.
Solid framework. I love that.
So again, I keep things very, very simple.
No, it's very logical, actually, the way you kind of framed everything. It all, that kind of all ties back in with another, and it makes total sense. How did you come up, you'd mentioned like the Amazon book, but did you come up with this over time, or was it through a presentation that you did at one time, or how did you come across this framework?
So this came around a couple, really by reading the books and then trying to synthesize. Reading books is great. It's awesome. And I don't know a single leader who does not read. But I had to figure out a way, like, okay, how do I actually apply this crap? Like when does it matter for me and for my people in my career? So typically what I would do is I would have these books that I would put on a reading list for any leader that worked for me. And then we would do book clubs. Every leader who's worked for me for the last 5 years has read Extreme Ownership, The Amazon Way, Verbal Judo, what's the last one? And then Large Account Management. Every single leader, doesn't matter what role they're actually in, if they lead, they read these four things.
I'll have to read those books.
and Verbal Judo, I'll do a quick commercial on that. So
sure.
I was not always a great communicator, at least from a professional perspective. And like, I've always been able to tell good stories, but I couldn't always communicate what I needed people to do, nor could I convince them to do things if I needed them to. I had a manager who used to be a cop, and he's like, hey, I've got a friend of mine who wrote this book. He was a cop in Omaha for like 35 years, never once discharged his firearm in 35 years of police work. So, okay, I'll bite. And the first chapter talks about this guy walks in on a domestic violence situation, husband and wife screaming at each other. He walks in, observes the situation. There's no physical altercation, just screaming. So he sits down, He opens paper, starts reading. This guy's in full uniform, sitting at their kitchen table reading the paper.
That's funny.
And as they recognize that he's there, they stop talking and eventually come sit down at the table. He finishes the article, folds paper up, says, cool. Now they're ready to talk. Let's discuss. And so it's a very different way to think about altercation and, you know, verbal discussion. So I also happen to be a master of the martial arts.
Mm.
That also made me sort of think of, like, all right, look at the different ways that I express physical culture or that I think about life. How can I then pull this into what I do for work? And how can I think about things a little bit differently so that it makes sense to me, but then other people can grasp the concepts that I can grasp? So pull all that together. What I like to do once, twice a quarter is I'll go downstairs in my basement and I'll do just a free conscious day where I'll just sit on my mic. I've got nothing around me. I relax. I'm kind of meditating. And then I just start talking. And I just let free flow consciousness come out onto the tape.
Mm-hmm.
These can go for 2 hours. The longest one I think I did was over 10 hours. And I pull, and this concept, the three pillars, came from one of those sessions.
Mm, that's cool.
And then I just expanded on it over the years.
That's super cool. I actually have a friend that actually goes out and like records. Like he'll just have like a mic on him or like a lavalier or something, and then just like walk around and record stuff like while he's like cruising around. It's similar to what you're saying. Apparently, like a lot of good ideas.
Well, but honestly, I shouldn't be driving in the state I'm in when I'm doing this.
I get that. I have one last question for you, because I'm kind of curious, because you seem like a good person to ask this question. How do you deal with like difficult conversations? As far as I know that like sometimes like we are put in them like on the spot or on the fly, so that's one thing. But let's just say like ones that you have to prepare as well. Like how do you think about those?
Yeah. I look at what the end goal is. What are we trying to do? And we'll look from a professional perspective. More often than not, the most difficult conversation is a separation, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it is somebody's performance, whether it is layoffs, whatever the case may be. The initial piece of the conversation, I dehumanize immediately. Today is going to be your last day at X, wherever that place is. I just get it out of the way. No buildup, no drama, nothing. Mm-hmm. I then give them a very clear, concise reason why. It could be a couple reasons. And I am very upfront about this is the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
It is because of your performance on XYZ. This was the expectation. This is how you performed. Those didn't match. I will certainly listen to their explanation, but ultimately, it at this point, the decision is made.
Mm-hmm.
If it is like company layoffs, I'm upfront. Like, we're in a position right now where we have to make cuts. And unfortunately, you came out as one of those cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll give reasons why. I prepare for the conversations knowing that there could be any number of reactions, but ultimately I let them know what's happening. I tell them why it's happening. I also remind them, like, this is not a reflection on who you are as a person, simply on how you performed while you were here.
That's fair.
And this is potentially a great jumping off point, because 9 times out of 10, most of them didn't feel they were properly educated on what the expectations were. So I tell them, this is a great lesson in that everywhere you go moving forward, ensure you're very clear on the expectations of your role. Because I had to learn the same lesson the same way. So I show them also, like, because more often than not, I'm 1, 2, sometimes 3 levels higher than them on the food chain at that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see that today is not a death sentence, as painful as it is. And that goes back to extreme ownership. I allow people to screw up. Like, failure is not a death sentence with me. Maybe a reprimandable sentence, but it's not a death sentence. And so that's why a lot of people don't want to make decisions on things. Because they're afraid of, to your point earlier, how someone's going to react, or what if I lose my job?
Mm.
So again, I show people that, like, this is unfortunately part of the human experience. It sucks. But again, you either learn from it, or you roll over and wet on yourself and you don't learn a lesson from it.
No, I like that. I think that a lot of times too, anytime that I've ended up in a spot where, like, I don't know, it didn't work out and I ended up having to go find like a new gig, usually it sucks at the time, but usually after you're like, oh, actually I'm in such a better spot now. I think that's like kind of just like one of those things where it's a real kick to like your nervous system when it happens. But I think that afterwards, after you get out of it, you end up usually in a good spot. And usually, like, if you had any sort of awareness, you probably learned something about yourself, like what you screwed up on or what you could have done better.
I mean, I shared this on LinkedIn earlier this week on a situation that, and I don't know if you've read that yet, but I erred in a situation where a carrier was put on a load that I booked. I didn't completely follow protocol, and I was fired on the spot.
Damn.
I was the top booking rep at this organization. I developed their entire training program. I helped grow them from 6 to 20 people in under 2 years.
Damn.
And I made a lot of money at this place. I made a lot of money for this place. Yeah, that was the way it was perceived. Was it was malicious on my end? Wasn't my intent by any stretch. But also, I knew I could prove that. And so when the ownership group, there's two guys, said, yeah, you did this, you did it on purpose, you're out.
Damn.
And that sucked. Like, I mean, I was trading car rides with one of my coworkers. They made him go home. So I had to walk home.
That sucks.
Yeah, like I couldn't even get a ride home. Like, are you serious? Like,
oh, that's like an extra kick and, when you're on the ground.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But again, it was a good lesson learned for me, because the carrier that I signed was supposed to be on do not use, and they weren't.
Hmm.
But the notes for that were in. I didn't check.
Hmm.
When I reviewed the carrier, they did not pass our standard. I screwed up. I am the one who screwed up. So I own that. And I own that to this day.
Yeah, I think when you own it too, it kind of, the finger pointing stops, I've noticed, when you own it. Because I feel like when people don't own it, then they just want to strangle them and then, like, get them to own it. And it's like one of those weird things. As soon as, like, you surrender and go, yeah, I own it or whatever, like, people stop throwing their arrows, which is kind of interesting. Also, any closing thoughts for us? Want to leave us with anything? I don't know. Favorite books or anything that you're looking forward to in the next couple months?
Yeah, so I list those four books, Extreme Ownership, Verbal Judo, The Amazon Way, and Large Account Management. Highly recommend all four of those. I'm going to be at TIA next week. So again, not sure when this is going to drop, but I get in on April 9th. So anybody's going to be at TIA, feel free. Broker Carrier Summit, April 22nd to the 24th. If anybody's in Daytona Beach Memorial Day weekend, I'll be competing at a Perfect Storm Hardcore Gym. So if you want to see what this whole Strongest Man Logistics thing's about, come through. I will leave you guys with this. I didn't take time to be deliberate about my career journey until about 10 years into my career. I've been in the space now 17 years. My life is completely changed because I took time to decide or figure out who I am, who I am as a human, and what I do. I then figured out what I want to be spending my time doing. And I decided who are the type of people, maybe not the individuals, but the type of people that I want to spend time with. And now I focus all my efforts on those things. I do the things I want to do because they pay my bills. I'm hanging around the people I want to hang out with because they fill me with joy. And I go places and do things that I enjoy going and doing because they play into those things. It takes time to get there, but holy crap, does your life get awesome when you do it?
It sounds like you're very conscious and awake with the way you're thinking, which I really like, because I feel like a lot of people are asleep at the wheel. And when you sit there and you kind of focus on these things and, like, these levers that you could kind of do on a day-to-day basis, your life becomes a lot more whole, which it sounds like it is for you.
I am the author of my story, and I refuse to give everybody else the pen.
I love that. That's super good. So where do people find you as well if they want to reach out?
So LinkedIn, Robert Bain, Strongest Man Logistics. You can email me at rbain@glcs.net. Or if you want to see the powerlifting journey, you can see me at Bain316 on Instagram, or follow me at Strongest Man Logistics on Instagram as well.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. Thanks for sticking around to the end of the episode with Bain, the Strongest Man in Freight. Hope you enjoyed that. He's very logical the way he thinks about things. I got to try that thing, just sticking myself in a room for a couple hours and then just recording my thoughts maybe on my mic and just maybe using some AI to see where that leads and have some new ideas, new business ideas, etc. So I completely think that's a cool way to do things. Anyways, hope you enjoyed that episode with Bain. Hope everyone's enjoying the lovely weekend. Stay safe out there. Listen to some good music. Read a book. Anyways, I will catch you on the next one. See ya.